Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Mass murder on an unimaginable scale, says London's deputy police commissioner today, thwarted with 21 arrests in London and Birmingham. The alleged intended targets, as many as 10 passenger airline flights from London to Washington, New York, California. A wave of attacks planned, said the British Home Secretary, that would have meant civilian deaths on what he called an unprecedented scale. The alleged plot? Liquid explosives smuggled aboard in hand baggage. Timers and detonators assembled in flight, now banned from carry-on, toothpaste, shampoo, hair gel. The U.S. threat level? Red alert. Up next on Point, the plot and what's known now. We go first today to London. Steve McGrath is transportation editor for Dow Jones. Steve, thanks for joining us. What's the latest known on the number of arrests and the scale of the plot?
Yeah, good morning, Tom. We're still at 21 in custody. The police have said that it is an international plot. They haven't expanded on that. There have been some homes evacuated in a town called High Wycombe, which is just outside London. There are no further details at the moment on why those have been evacuated. Both US and UK authorities have said that they're confident the plot has been foiled, but the investigation is ongoing and they can't rule out further arrests in the case.
Now, Steve, when did these arrests begin? What seems to be the origin of the understanding that there was something afoot here?
Things seem to have moved very quickly, but the arrests were made overnight in London, Birmingham, and some areas around London. The story really had broken by 4 a.m. this morning, London time. The scale, as I say, things are still moving very fluidly here, and police are only giving details as and when they will, you know, things are confirmed.
21 arrests, but we've heard all kinds of numbers flying around, such as that there were 50 suspected participants, or as many as. Is there a presumption that there are still alleged terror plotters on the loose?
The UK police won't confirm anything. As I said, they only will say that the investigation is going on and they can't rule out that further arrests will be made. It isn't clear whether those arrests would be in the UK or whether the investigation is going on further afield outside the UK.
United Airlines, American Airlines, Continental Airlines reportedly targeted here. And the plan, as far as it's been described, liquid explosives to be assembled with detonators and timers in flight. Is that correct?
That seems to be what's being suggested. Nitroglycerin has been one explosive suggested, but certainly the ban that has been put in place in the UK is on all liquids, particularly in hand luggage. Nobody is being allowed to take liquids onto flights, so that would suggest that there is this is to do with some sort of in-flight liquid device.
The British comments had a lot to do with the scale of the ambition of this alleged plot, as many as 10 flights targeted. Is that what you're hearing as well?
That's right, yes. 10 flights seems to be what's being suggested. The US authorities said that the flights specifically targeted were the three US airlines flying from London. That's Continental, United, and American. As I say, the UK police are being a bit more cautious. They're not giving out full details until they say they've completed the investigation.
Steve, you're transport editor there in London for Dow Jones. How does this work? If passengers can't take on carry-on baggage, if it all has to be screened, if no liquid can get up there, does the air transport system still function? Can it?
Well, it's the UK airports, all UK airports at the moment are suffering severe delays, cancellations of flights. British Airways, for example, as the UK's biggest carrier, has cancelled all flights to the UK and European destinations for today. And there are severe delays on long-haul flights to the US included, and some cancellations. What seems to be happening is that because of the short notice that happened and the severe nature of the security measures that have been taken place, planes are stuck at gates. That means other planes, incoming planes, can't land because there are no space for them to land. So the system, certainly for Heathrow, which is of course a very busy airport, at this stage is not working very well. But authorities are saying they're going to try everything to get things moving again, and by tomorrow they hope to have a better service resumed. But I think that it's going to take many days to clear the backlog of passengers who are stuck and to get things operating under this new system. The authorities say they do not know how long these enhanced security measures are going to be in place for.
And Steve, finally, how is news of the arrest being received in London? Peter Clark, head of London's anti-terrorism branch, said last night that the investigation had reached a critical point just last night. Are police there being applauded for their effectiveness in halting this, or are people aghast at how close it came potentially to being a plot that was executed?
I think in London, certainly, the UK authorities have been very good in warning, since 9/11 and indeed since the London bombings on 7/7, that these plots were ongoing. They would do everything in their possible powers to stop them, but that there was always an ongoing risk of such plots. So Londoners are very aware that this was a possibility and are really, taking it in their stride and are supportive of the police and the authorities.
And finally, who was arrested? Were these British nationals, foreigners? What background?
All the police have said is that the 21 taken into custody were British nationals. They wouldn't give any more details than that.
But these would have been suicide bombers, obviously.
They didn't say that, but I presume that it would be wider than that, and that is a team from support people and to the people who are going to carry out the explosions themselves.
So suicide bombers plus support. Steve McGrath, transportation editor for Dow Jones in London. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
I want to turn to Washington now and Josh Meyer, Los Angeles Times terrorism correspondent. Josh, thank you very much for being here. What's the bottom line from Michael Chertoff, Gonzalez, and the Bush administration so far?
Well, good to be here. It's, as usual, they're scrambling to figure out the details about this. This is a UK-originated investigation, but the London and the British authorities and the U.S. authorities work very, very closely together, and they consider this the real deal. They think it was a very thought-out plot, getting close to the execution phase, as Chertoff said this morning. What he said was there were very concrete steps underway to execute all elements of the plan. We're not sure right now what that means, but he also he was careful to say that they don't know all the details. They don't know how many people were involved. It could have been a lot more than 21. It could have even been less than 21. They don't know how many planes it was, and they don't know the details of exactly which flights were targeted.
The Homeland Security Department has invoked the red alert level for the first time. That's supposed to designate a severe risk of terrorist attacks. Is the risk ongoing, Josh?
Well, it's hard to say again. I mean, they certainly believe it is, and I think that they might be doing that out of an abundance of caution. But yes, I have never seen, and I wasn't sure I ever would see, a red alert as such as it is, unless we were under threat of an imminent attack, which is, I think, what that was designated for. The London authorities have done the same thing. They've gone to a severe designation, which means that assuming that there's an expectation of imminent attack is the exact wording that they use. So clearly they're very concerned about what's out there that they know about and what's out there that they don't know about.
An international plot, British authorities said, and Michael Chertoff echoed that. What's the implication in that? We have arrests in London, but is there more to come?
Well, I think that when they say international, it could be just London to the United States. But clearly London, there's a nexus between London and Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda affiliates in Pakistan and even Afghanistan, and that there's been a lot of arrests in the UK and Pakistan over the last couple of years that show connections, that show plots that are being hatched in London by people trained in Pakistan and Afghanistan that are meant to attack the United States and U.S. interests. So I, for one, am looking to see if there's any such connections like that, to see if there's any connections to the bombings of last year and other plots based in the United Kingdom.
Josh, thank you very much for being here.
Good to be here.
I'm joined now in the studio and very glad to be by Andrew Basevich, Professor of International Relations at Boston University, retired U.S. Army Colonel, author of The New American Militarism. Andrew Basevich, thanks for being here.
Good to be with you.
And with us, Juliet Kayyem, lecturer in public policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, former member of the National Commission on Terrorism. Juliet Kayyem, thank you for joining us. Juliet, first to you. For most of us, this is out of the blue, but we read that there's been a lot of work going on this, at least for some days or maybe more. Is this a complete surprise? Was this expected? How do you hear it?
Well, I don't think it was a complete surprise by the law enforcement intelligence agencies, both in the UK and the US. They clearly, at least in the United Kingdom, were working on this for some time. You just don't get numbers like 20 or 21 arrests without serious ongoing surveillance. The British are good at it. Their laws permit it. They are they like to have a sort of wait and see policy. So they were probably following these guys for some time. And we also I'm not quite sure how this unfolded to the British. Was it a walk-in? Did someone tell on these alleged terrorists? So that's long-term. But why is this going public now in terms of the arrest? If they were worried about press leaks, that's understandable. But one of the problems with such public arrest, as we know from the U.S. experience, is a lot of people probably have gone underground. When you talk about 21 arrests, just extrapolating from that, you can imagine there are probably a couple dozen people who knew about this terrorist attack. And so where those people are and, you know, are they in hiding now? Can we get them is one of the big questions.
This may be a naive question, but if the attack was, the plot was imminent and the investigators in the UK saying it had reached a critical point, I mean, they'd have to arrest them, I guess. And then you've got to stop people if they don't have all of them or may not. You'd have to stop people with their carry-on liquids.
Right. You have to do that now. You have to do that probably pretty publicly. The imminent point here is that I don't know. I mean, we're hearing rumors that it was going to be on the anniversary of September 11th. We don't know at this stage. No one seems to know what triggered the imminency. Was it that they started to produce it? The British do like to wait till the last minute before these arrests. And what we do know, at least from the United States side, is that we were clearly involved with the investigation. I thought it was interesting when both Chertoff and the Attorney General Gonzalez spoke. They both said that they are hindered because this is whoever the airlines were. This is a British investigation, that they are hindered under British laws, or they want to respect the British laws in terms of what they can say. So, when you compare, you know, our own arrests and how public we are, as compared to how little we seem to know right now on what's going on the British end, it's because this is and will continue to be a British investigation.
So what they can say, at least at the moment, may be limited. Let me ask you about the technique alleged here. Michael Chertoff and the British saying that the plan was to use liquid explosives disguised as beverages and other common products, shampoo, toothpaste, I don't know, and detonators described as electronic devices. He said it was sophisticated. It had a lot of members. It was international in scope. Have we been wide open to an attack like this ever since 9/11?
I think so. I mean, when you look at least what we can get from the tea leaves here, that they were clearly going to use computers, iPods, whatever else to detonate, and they were going to and use, you know, shampoo or soda cans or whatever else.
How much damage can a shampoo-sized bottle of Semtex do?
It could do significant damage if you're in the air, right? Because it could. All you need to do is create sort of blow up some part of the airplane, and the airplane probably wouldn't be able to manage itself. These are international flights, so it's high altitude. So it's, I hate to use the word genius, but it was pretty smart on their part to plan it this way, because they're clearly looking at our existing vulnerabilities in terms of the kind of attack. And here's the bad news side of the story. Good news is great disruption. That's all good news. Bad news is, I mean, these guys are still pretty well organized, pretty good at planning things.
And the scale of ambition, remarkable. The number of participants and what it would have required in the number of, apparently, suicide deaths along with this. Juliet,
and British.
And British nationals were told. Juliet, stand by. Andrew Basevich, if I can have your patience for just a moment here, I want to turn to Brighton, England. We're joined from Brighton by Imam Abdul Jalil Sajid. He's chairman of the Muslim Council for Religious and Racial Harmony, UK. Imam, thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
I understand that you were given a heads up days before these arrests that something was going on. What do you know about who was arrested? British nationals, who?
Well, we have been informed regularly, and we have regular meeting with security agencies and our home office, and then we were told that something is imminent, and we were alarmed earlier. Even yesterday, our Home Secretary John Reid gave a public speech about immigration and terrorism and linked to it. So we were aware that something is going to happen. But this morning, we were alerted that 21 British-born young Muslim of Pakistani origin were arrested on to spoil this plot, which were going to be a international or global dimension, and especially British and U.S. authorities were quite involved to stop it.
Let me ask you, you're on the Council for Religious and Racial Harmony. After the bombings in London last year, there was a great deal of talk about trying to patch up relations with British Muslims. Here you've got 21 arrested and some significant number of them allegedly ready to die in terror attacks. What does that say about the mindset? What's driving these young British-born, Pakistan-origin, alleged potential suicide bombers?
It is a serious matter, and we all, Muslims and non-Muslims, are working together with authorities. We salute and pay tribute to our security agencies who have done this tremendous job, but it cannot be done alone. We all are working together, and I think Muslims in UK are now part and parcel of ear and eye of our agency.
But how do you stop breeding the willingness, how do you stop breeding the readiness to become terror suicide bombers among British nationals? How do you stop it?
We can stop it if we go to the root causes and listen to these young criminal-minded people who are gone out of bound, and we have to bring them back to the normality and civility and see that killing innocent people is not only heinous crime, but it's an evil crime, which Islam itself condemns it. So we have to talk and listen to them. That's what we're trying to prevent extremism, but it's a long way process. But we have started the nip in the evil in the bud, and now, and I hope we will succeed very soon.
Imam, keep talking. We're counting on you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Imam Abdul Jalil Sajid joining us there from Brighton, England, chairman of the Muslim Council for Religious and Racial Harmony, UK. Andrew Basevich, retired U.S. Army colonel, is with me, professor of international relations. Andrew Basevich, how do you look at the bigger context for this? We've got war going on in Iraq. The Bush administration has presented that as the central front in the war on terror. We've got war now in Lebanon as well, and we've had threats out of that quarter to bring that war to the United States, which has supplied Israel with a lot of armaments. Do you see this as, what, a straight line from 9/11 to this attack? As something new originating out of Iraq or out of Lebanon? Tie it in to the bigger military picture, if it can be tied.
Well, a couple of comments. The first would be, I think that you've emphasized the extent to which we see evidence here of very grandiose ambitions. But as Juliet was suggesting, we really don't know whether this group, this conspiracy, has what their capabilities were. And that's very important to
because
keep in mind.
It was allegedly, reportedly nipped.
Yeah, and we simply don't know yet. And we should be attentive to trying to find answers to that question.
Are you suggesting that British authorities, when they speak of intended mass murder, that American authorities, when they say this is very serious, the real deal, are you suggesting they're exaggerating?
I'm suggesting we don't know, and I'm not sure they know yet, because they have to peel this thing apart.
Mass murder on an unprecedented scale. I just have to point out that's the British words.
That's their ambition. Let me make a historical comparison.
Mm-hmm.
1942, we have Nazi saboteurs who land in Florida and Long Island. They're quickly scarfed up by the FBI, and that's proclaimed as a great triumph of FBI detective work. But what we later learned is that the reason the Nazi saboteur plot fell apart is because the saboteurs themselves were utterly inept. So the lesson of 1942 was not that the Nazis posed a direct threat to the United States. Rather, the lesson was they really didn't pose that much of a threat of a subversive sense. So I'm not
caution here, but 21 arrests snarling up international air traffic
in a
profound way.
It's a big deal in terms of what they were trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd want to know more about what they were actually able to do. The second point would be that This really is what the global war on terror ought to be. Relentless police work to identify criminals who are trying to commit these acts of violence. Unfortunately, the United States has made the global war on terror a project of invading countries, overthrowing governments, and I think we see ever more clearly as events continue to unfold in Iraq, in Lebanon, that invading other countries and overthrowing governments is not where we should be placing the main effort. It's a police problem.
A police problem, and watch out for the war angle of it. Juliet, what about the ambition, the capacity here? I mean, it's laid out so rather matter-of-factly. Liquid explosives, detonators assembled in flight, and down they would come, 6 or 10, whatever the number. It sounds like big ambition and large capacity. Do you doubt it?
It's not that I doubt it. I mean, I think that the British likely that these guys had intended on doing it, and then what is going to unfold in the days and weeks to come is their capability of doing it. So I think both of us are sort of saying it is no question this was a good arrest, because even the desire to do it meant that they were all getting together to do it. The question is how do we interpret that word imminent in terms of both the British and American public sense of how panicked should they be today? Because I think most people listening are probably slightly panicked right now. And so the imminent word is a word that we need to figure out sort of how far along they were. No question that that the numbers suggested by the British at this stage suggest, at least to me, that that the al-Qaeda threat, if it's linked to bin Laden, who knows, probably not, but that the al-Qaeda threat is as ambitious as it was on September 11th. So that, to me, is probably the more terrifying aspect of today, was that we did nothing. I mean, we did a lot, right? We did a lot, the war in Afghanistan to disrupt al-Qaeda. But in terms of the motivation of groups of people, whether it's in Western Europe or Pakistan or even the United States, that we have been less successful in that regard. And so that's the part to me that's just saying, wow, you know, and we know it. I mean, we know it by the polling in certain communities. We know it because we're in Afghanistan, Iraq, and now Lebanon and Israel, the conflict there, that the temperature in terms of people of a certain belief system believing that terrorism is the right approach to political discourse has not altered since September 11th. That, to me, is sort of the saddest part of our war on terror, that we have not lowered the temperature in any regard.
Willingness, apparently undiminished capacity, we don't know, but we're being told significant and imminent here. Juliet Andrubasevich, please stand by. Rob's calling from Xenia, Ohio. Rob, what do you think?
I just wanted to say I'm really grateful to have the Brits as an ally in the war on terror, and you know, I think that it makes me wonder what kind of tools the British police have to catch this type of crime. You know, are they monitoring cell phone traffic or what? But I think Tony Blair is a great leader, and I'm really grateful to have the British as allies.
So three cheers to the Brits on a big plot apparently foiled. Rob, thanks for your call. Let's turn to the UK for another perspective there. Paul Wilkinson joins us from St. Andrews, Scotland. He's chairman of the Centre for the Study of Terrorism and Political Violence at the University of St. Andrews. Mr. Wilkinson, thank you for joining us.
Hello. Nice to talk to you again.
What do you make of the alleged scale, ambition, and imminence of this terror plot?
I think it is clearly a very serious development, and I think the police are right not to be complacent. They've been very careful not to assume that they have identified all the people who are main players in this conspiracy. So there is the danger that there are people out there with the intention and the capability of undertaking this kind of attack. And that makes it all the more important to ensure that these new measures that have been introduced are properly implemented with rigor and with the kind of cooperation that the public has given in the past in these situations. And I'm sure the public will realize that this is in their interest, that this is for public safety reasons, and they need to be patient and to assist the aviation security personnel in their difficult job.
We're being told 21 arrests, being told British-born Pakistani origin Muslims. Are you shocked by this, or have you been fearing it, expecting it?
I have been aware of the danger because I study the field closely, and I think others in my specialism have also been worried about this as a possibility. And in my new edition of Terrorism versus Democracy, in my chapter on aviation security, I've underlined the problem of protection against these more exotic explosives, the explosives which may be comprised of peroxides used as oxidizers in composite explosives, TATP, which is triacetone triperoxide. Remember that a number of terrorist groups have used that in the recent past. Hamas has used TATP in their campaign against Israel. So these explosives in liquid form particularly provide a great challenge to aviation security. And I think the British measures to ensure that cabin luggage is not taken on board may seem very draconian, but I think they're sensible measures fully justified by the seriousness of the threat.
Let me take a call from Dayton, Ohio. Eric is on the line. Hi, Eric. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
We're okay. What do you think?
I'm just concerned a little bit because everyone acts like liquid explosives are a new thing. I got my first airline job 8 years ago after a career flying for the military in the United States.
Yes.
And I am, from day one, we were warned in our anti-terrorism training to watch for liquid explosives on the airplane. I think the big difference now is in those days, prior to 9/11, we were taught that go along with the hijacker, spending a night not at your destination is not nearly as bad as, you know, being killed by somebody and then having them take over the airplane. After 9/11, we've found that these guys don't want to go somewhere. They just want to die in the air.
But if we've known about it for all this time, it hasn't been stopped. How do you stop, and we haven't stopped shampoo on flights? Why are you annoyed at these arrests now, Eric? You're a pilot.
Well, I'm annoyed because nobody seems to have done anything about this long before. This has been a threat for over a decade. Why is it all of a sudden just now getting attention? Like you say, nearly 5 years after 9/11, just now people are taking notice of the possibility of liquid explosives on an airplane?
Yeah, there's a pilot who wants to know. Eric, let us pick it up. And, of course, it goes all the way back to the plot years ago to blow up 10 or 11 planes over the Pacific. Paul Wilkinson, let me go first to you on this. Why so long in doing something about liquids on airplanes if it's been a real and present threat all that time?
I think part of the difficulty is that people haven't really taken aboard the importance of the development of suicide attacks. Your listener is right. That does alter the balance considerably when people are prepared to take their own lives in the course of blowing up an aircraft. All the security measures in the 70s and 80s were premised on the idea that they wouldn't want to kill themselves. They just wanted to blow up the aircraft, so they planted it in the hold, or they left it in the cabin.
But weren't we put profoundly on the other side of that by 9/11? I mean, this is not news at this point.
That's right. But I think that, alongside that neglect of the possibility of suicide bombers wanting to sabotage airliners, you have the kind of inertia in security policymaking, which unfortunately affects governments and the private sector, particularly the blame game. You know, whose responsibility is it? Who should pay for the costs of the increased security and so on? We should have overcome those problems in the light of 9/11, but I think there are still some bureaucratic hurdles to get over before we get real improvements that are needed in aviation security. There is room for plenty of improvement. We've been concentrating in this last few minutes on the problem of unconventional or exotic explosives. But as your listener says, they've been around for some time.
Let me ask you about the Al-Qaeda piece of this. I know I just have you for another minute, Paul. No one's confirmed whether this is Al-Qaeda related or not. How do you look at it from your seat?
I think it has all the hallmarks of an Al-Qaeda-style conspiracy. The scale of it, the fact that it targets civil aviation across the Atlantic, U.S. and U.K.
Does that mean that Al-Qaeda is alive and well and kicking among British nationals?
Yes, it means that, in fact, the network of networks has affiliates and cells which are connected to it, which are fanatical and are capable of launching these attacks. So we have to recognize that it's still in business. It is not like traditional terrorist organizations, a kind of vertical, hierarchical organization. It's a loose movement of groups rather than a tight-knit organization. But they are certainly capable of lethal and destructive attacks, and we need to remain extremely vigilant and constantly review our security policies.
Paul Wilkinson at the University of St. Andrews in St. Andrews, Scotland. Mr. Wilkinson, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
I want to get another voice from something like maybe the front line in this story, presaging perhaps what has happened in the last 24 hours. We're joined right now by Jonathan Wilson. He's a professor of English at Tufts University. He was on a flight from the UK to the US earlier this week. Jonathan Wilson, are you there?
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi, it's good to hear your voice. We're glad you're down and safe, but tell us what happened and when the flight that you and your family were on.
We were on a flight from London that left from Heathrow Monday. I think it was an 11 a.m. flight. We got 2.5 hours out over the Atlantic, and then the pilot informed us that he'd just done a 180-degree turn, and we were going to be returning to Heathrow. The reason he gave was that there were some problems in Boston.
And when you landed at Heathrow, having turned back?
When we landed at Heathrow, the plane on the left side, there were a number of armed policemen in flak jackets, police vehicles, and four policemen in flak jackets quickly came on the plane and removed a family, four people from the right side of the plane in our cabin, actually, and took them off the plane, then searched the seats, searched the sort of luggage area above the seats.
So Jonathan, we know you're not Scotland Yard, but right. Looking back on that experience with this news today, what do you make of what you went through? What are you thinking?
Well, it's very hard to know. I mean, the next day, the pilot told us it was the same crew coming back. We stayed overnight in London. They flew us back. And he said what had actually happened was that halfway across the Atlantic, or 2.5 hours in, Homeland Security had alerted him that a person who was on the no-fly list was on our plane.
And they were keyed up enough to turn the entire flight around to address that, if indeed that's what it was.
Yeah, it was, it was a man and three women who were in, Islamic dress. Some of my fellow passengers had spoken to the family when they were getting on the plane and said they were very friendly and helped someone's mother-in-law with their luggage. So we actually have, no idea who they were. I mean, when we flew back, we did go into this sort of strange this security mode. We can only go to the bathroom one at a time. The crew were fantastic, I have to say.
And now with the news of these arrests, Jonathan, how do you feel about transatlantic flights, UK, US?
Well, obviously, there's an enormous amount of anxiety that seeps in. I mean, I think that the flight that we were on, I mean, whether this was connected or not, I mean, the one strange part was that when they opened the baggage compartment, there was absolutely nothing in it above the, everyone else's baggage was crammed. But these could have been completely innocent people. I don't know, what happened. They were, I believe, released by the British. But again, I don't know. But
armed police on board just days before these arrests, and you can't help wondering if there was some kind of ramp to these arrests
exactly,
in that.
Exactly. Mm. And I think the other troubling aspect of it is how It could only happen 2.5 hours in. I mean, what's going on in the relationship between the sort of British and the American security, where somebody can be on a U.S. no-fly list?
Right, you're halfway across the Atlantic before you know about it. Jonathan Wilson, okay. Thank you. We're relieved that everything worked out well. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Let me take a call from Annapolis, Maryland. Sean's on the line. Hi, Sean, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I just, my question is how much longer we can continue to bandy about the world so arrogantly and not understand why things keep escalating. I mean, what's going on in Iraq, Middle East, and now this latest plot all seem to me to just reinforce the idea that we're not handling the situation properly. And also reinforced by your earlier call from the pilot who said, why isn't this being addressed? I mean, people have been able to make bombs in the garage for years and years. It's no surprise that you can mix a couple chemicals from your kitchen cabinet together.
Yeah. Sean, let us pick it up. Andrew Bacevich, we heard the Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez saying earlier, this is it. This is the war on terror. That's why we're doing all we're doing. Sean speaks to your point. What do you say?
Well, I think Sean's right, that this really is an event that ought to cause us to rethink or at least think critically about U.S. strategy. I mean, the Bush administration from 9/11 onward has portrayed the problem as one that pits liberal democracies against some sort of great dysfunction within the Islamic world. And the fact that these 21 now conspirators are all British citizens of Pakistani origin really tells us once again that the dysfunction, at least to some extent, is within us. It's in Britain. It's in Europe. You recall the Paris riots, and so the notion that it's simply a virtuous or liberal or humane West that has to bring about change in a backward Islamic world, there's something fundamentally wrong about that.
And the hundreds of thousands of U.S. soldiers who have served in Iraq and the hundreds of billions spent there, the right destination for these resources, has it at least helped, do you think, or the opposite?
In my own judgment, it's had quite the opposite, but you put your finger on the point. We have made enormous investments in terms of resources and people, and my sense is we're pouring all this down the wrong hole. It's misdirected effort.
Let me take a call from Iowa City, Iowa. Ofer's on the line. Hi, Ofer, you're on the air.
Hi. The U.S. government and the British government manufactured intelligence and went through this incredibly elaborate plan to invade a country illegally. And, now they have this secret evidence about 21 Muslims, with no proof. And curiously enough, they released it on the day that after Joe Lieberman, loses to an anti-war candidate. It seems to me like this whole thing is a sham, and it's designed to, increase racism. They say things like we're supposed to be scared of everyday objects, liquids.
So you're prepared to be completely skeptical about the whole report?
Absolutely. I mean, look, the U.S. government and the British government are engaged in an illegal war. If you think it's a big deal to organize an arrest of 21 people, think about what they did with the Iraq War.
Ofer, we've got the perspective, and we appreciate your call. Juliet Kayyem, there's hands-down skepticism about the whole thing. How do you respond to that? What do you say?
Well, it's all over the blogs, too, and I think without validating the skepticism, I think it's important to note its incredible existence in sectors of American public, that what has happened after 5 years in which basically the U.S. government has lost credibility in terms of for populations of the American public in terms of what the threat is. Now, that's bad on a variety of levels. First, because we want to believe our officials and what they say. But secondly, because the threat does still exist. And I think one of the hardest things is trying to figure out what are the real threats and what are the fake ones. I thought it was absolutely telling when a U.S. official said today, no, this one is the real deal. And I'm thinking, As opposed to what? The Miami arrest, the Lackawanna? I mean, and it's that. So it breeds skepticism in our officials by the public. And I think, your caller is is representing, I think, a real sentiment. And
I mean, here we are back on the home stretch to elections again.
Right.
And once again, we see these bright colors. Orange last time, red this time for the first time ever. Is it possible that that would be played, if indeed this is a terror effort, is it possible that would be played by the terrorists because of its political impact, or are we giving ourselves nightmares to look at it that way?
No, I think it's very conceivable. I mean, look at bin Laden's tape before the Kerry Bush election, the presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are savvy enough. Bin Laden came out less than a month ago saying, you know, forget Hezbollah, we're really going to rock your world, basically. So, I mean, they know about polling, they know who's winning and who's up and who's down. They're in tune with American political sentiment, cultural sentiment, and America's fears.
But you said earlier, if this is linked to bin Laden, and then you said probably not.
Right.
Now, there was that threat as if they were trying to grab some of the limelight from
right.
Hezbollah, saying, Hezbollah isn't the only folks who can make trouble here. We can land blows, too.
Right.
Does it fit into that picture? Why do you think it wasn't linked to al-Qaeda, if I got you right?
When I say linked to bin Laden, I mean unlike the 9/11 attacks that were basically we have evidence that he's sitting somewhere sort of mapping it out, saying do four planes, not eight. I don't think we're going to have that kind of administrative oversight by bin Laden. I think operationally he's out of the picture in that sense. But I do think that the fact he's still alive and his presence is basically, as all your other guests have said, is basically validating the sentiment of these homegrown cells, these cells that these wannabes, however professional they are or not. And so basically he sort of, you know, when we say al-Qaeda now, we basically mean, you know, anyone who listens to this guy and believes a certain sentiment about Islam and the world, but not like 9/11, where the evidence suggests, you know, bin Laden is sitting there picking out the number of planes. I don't think you're going to find any evidence like that.
The network may be more diverse. Our time grows short. I'm seeing now a Times of London report that Pakistani intelligence helped uncover this alleged plot. But here we are, Andrew Bacevich. The picture that's being painted, as many as 10 planes to be blown up mid-Atlantic on their way to the United States. I mean, it's such a shocking image 5 years after 9/11. We hoped not to be still wrestling with this. Here we are. What's your advice for the way ahead?
Well, I think I agree with President Bush and his people in one respect, and that is that this troubled relationship between the West and the Islamic world is something that we are going to be dealing with for decades to come. And so to say that we're 5 years past 9/11 and, gosh, here's another terrorist plot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why isn't it solved? It's not going to be solved anytime soon.
So the next
this is going to be a huge problem that we're going to have to wrestle with for decades. Where I disagree emphatically with the Bush administration is that the way to deal with the problem is to wage this global war on terror. And I think the fact that this latest plot is a plot of 19 Brits of Pakistani birth tells us that the notion that we should be invading Iraq, imposing democracy, and that somehow that holds promise of a solution is utterly wrongheaded.
So perk up the police, think twice about the rest, says Andrew Bacevich, professor of international relations at Boston University, author of The New American Militarism. Andrew Bacevich, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And Juliet Kayyem, former member, National Commission on Terrorism. Juliet, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.